Welcome back to another episode of Cohen's Corner. So as is usual with the Mets, there's been some good, some bad, and definitely a lot of ugly in the last couple of weeks since we spoke to you. The Mets have had some really exciting wins against the Yankees this past weekend. We're going to get into that. They've also had a lot of really tough losses, which we're also going to get into. We have a lot to cover, obviously, the last few weeks. It almost seems like there's been a whole new era of the Mets. It feels like there's new like chapters of the Mets season almost every couple of weeks when new kind of either scandals happen or just crazy things happen on and off the field. So there's definitely been a lot that's happened since we last talked to you. But we're really excited to get into all of the different excitement that's going on around the Mets in terms of questions we have, exciting things that we've witnessed, and just kind of fun topics we want to go over. But I think we're going to start with some of the bad slash ugly that we've been witnessing recently among the Mets games. And that is some of the kind of questionable decisions that have been made during the games. And, you know, I know Jake and I have somewhat different opinions on like how much role the manager actually has in the game. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, but I guess we're going to start off by just kind of discussing how, you know, we know the Mets obviously aren't a great team. If they were better, they would have a better record. But it certainly seems like recently there have been a lot of decisions made that aren't with the urgency of a team that is actually in contention for a playoff spot still, which they technically are. They haven't been eliminated, and they're actually not that close to being eliminated, believe it or not. So, Jake, I want to turn it over to you to kind of discuss maybe why you think some of the managerial decisions recently have not put the Mets in the best position to succeed down the home stretch of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's been plenty of moves. I mean, I remember even dating back to April, Rojas was making head-scratching moves that were kind of just like, he's going to work through the kinks again. Like, he still hasn't even really had a full season as a manager. But, I mean, at this point, some of the mistakes he makes are just inexcusable. And the fact that in his post-game press conferences or when he does weekly spots on WFAN, he doesn't have any regret towards the decisions he makes, it seems like. And it's just, I don't know. He's just not really – I don't know if it's he's not holding himself accountable. But just some of these decisions, like, all right, for instance – a week ago in Miami, right? It was an extra innings. Brian De La Cruz was up. De La Cruz was smoking the ball all night. And you had first base open with the winning run on, third base? And that's when De La Cruz hit that bomb to center that Almora didn't even try to catch. He just watched it hit the wall for some reason. But there's an open base. De La Cruz was the best hitter in that lineup that night. Brian Anderson was out. He was hurt. Jesus Aguilar was out. He was hurt. And I don't even think Miguel Rojas played that night. So De La Cruz was their best hitter that night. You have first base wide open, and he'll be irrelevant on first because the winning run's on third. Why not walk him and pitch to Lewin Diaz, who has a 1.18 batting average? I mean, it's a no-brainer. I get that it was a righty-righty. I guess that's what Rojas said for the matchup, but it's ridiculous. And he's like, we trust our closer. That's fine. You trust Diaz. I get that. You want to trust Diaz. But trust him in the situation against a hitter that has a batting average almost below 100. I mean, it doesn't make sense.
Potential walks aren't always a bad thing. I mean, like in the game yesterday, for example.
No.
Which I went to with my family, when they intentionally walked Arenado to get to Molina in, what was it, the 10th inning? Because they had...
Yeah, it worked. And Molina got it into a double play.
Sometimes works perfectly because Molina is slow. So if he hits a ground ball, chances are it's going to be a double play. The go-ahead run's already on base. So, you know, one versus two runs, I guess it makes a difference. But it's not like the winning run... It's not like you're putting the winning run on necessarily. So in some situations, and I feel like the Mets don't intentionally walk that much, but maybe they should more often because we've seen it in a few instances where, and you know, hindsight vision is always 20/20, but we saw an instance yesterday. Sometimes those things do work out, and it did work out with Molina grounding into that double play. So you're right. When the obvious best hitter is up and their run is completely meaningless, like objectively meaningless because the game's already won if they've scored. You're right. It definitely does not make sense to pitch them in that situation.
No. And then, so again, in that Cardinals game, he made that decision and I tweeted about it. Like, wow, he finally walked the guy with a base open, a good hitter in Arenado, walked him and it worked out. Molina grounded into a double play. And more often than not, I mean, going back to that Miami game, if the guy on deck Diaz beats you, you tip your cap, but you can't let the best hitter in the lineup that night beat you. Like for instance, when the Mets play, whenever they play the Nationals, the rule is, for them, you can't let Juan Soto beat you. And I'm not saying by any means that Brian De La Cruz is Juan Soto. I'm just saying that that night, he was obviously the best hitter in that lineup, and he had been crushing the ball all night. So you can't let him beat you. It makes no sense. It's baffling. And some of these, like all these moves, we could be making from our couch and we see that it's wrong. I mean,
well, because we're watching the game, and sometimes I feel like a lot of the frustration with some of the moves comes from fans thinking that, you know, based on how the game has progressed, certain decisions should be made. And I feel like sometimes decisions aren't made based on the game itself that has unfolded. And I feel like that definitely leads to a lot of frustration because, you know, you're right. You can see if a hitter has hit like three home runs in a game, for example, say Brian De La Cruz had hit like three home runs in that game or whatever. The point was, if someone's like crushing the ball, it doesn't necessarily matter what the strategy is. I don't know. I feel like what has happened that day sometimes is the most important data to analyze whatever you're looking at. And sometimes I don't think that's taken into consideration enough with how decisions are made is like what has just happened. And I guess the bigger sample size is sometimes important, or matchups sometimes do matter, especially with hitters who have really severe splits, but a lot of them don't necessarily. And then sometimes like matchups don't matter that much. And it's just who's a hotter hitter that.
Yeah, no, I'm tired of hearing about the matchups. Yes. Sometimes it makes sense, but like, for example, I mean, there's been plenty of games where he didn't bring Aaron Loop into a specific situation, like Saturday against the Yankees. He didn't bring Aaron Loop in. He's got Brad Hand in. He's got plenty of people he could use. Or yeah, there's plenty of times he won't bring in Aaron Loop because of the matchup. But it's not a lefty-lefty. Well, Aaron Loop splits, if you look at them, he pitches just as well to right-handed hitters as he does the left-handed hitters.
He has one ERA this year. He's their best reliever.
Like, and he has no urgency, like in the Cardinals game last night. Why on earth would you pitch Jake Reed, who I get in his few appearances before he got hurt was good, but he hasn't pitched in a month. You're going to put him in this high leverage spot in the 11th inning when you were able to warm up Trevor Williams and bring him in behind him. Why wouldn't he be your guy before Jake Reed? That makes no sense. That's what I'm getting to too. Brad Hand pitched. He was ready when the Mets almost tied the game. They had Brad Hand up to pitch. Why would you have Jake Reed in there over Brad
that
Hand?
Make a lot of sense. I agree.
It makes literally no sense. And I get managers make mistakes, like they're human and stuff, but usually the mistakes are like they'll make the right analytical move or they'll make the smart move and it just doesn't pan out. And that's fine. Like they're just not pressing the right buttons. But when these buttons are so obvious and Luis Rojas isn't pushing them, and then he goes on Carton and Roberts and says that he doesn't manage games in September with any more urgency than he does in April, that's asinine.
That's an issue in April.
You don't know where your team's going to be in September. Now we're 2 weeks away from the end of the season. You know that you have a playoff spot right in front of you if you can go get it. You can see on the big-ass out-of-town scoreboard in left field that the Reds had lost, the Braves had lost, the Phillies had lost,
everyone
had lost, and you just had to beat the Cardinals. Everyone knew that. Like, it was obvious. Like, anyone could tell you that. You just got to look up and see the score. You know, and even if they had won, it's even more important. Like, manage with some urgency. Why Stroman, what was he at, 90 pitches, and you didn't let him go out to pitch the seventh?
After six.
Loop
and
went
his spot wasn't due up.
Diaz could have went longer, like no urgency. And it wasn't Stroman asking to come out of the game. Like they asked him about it after the game, and he said, I guess they're just trying to help me, and he understood it. But like, it's ridiculous. Are you not trying to make the playoffs? Isn't that the goal here? Like, manage with some urgency. To say that a game in April is the same as a game in September is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my entire life out of a manager. Like, how can you think that way?
The only part of this interpretation of that statement I do kind of agree with is that maybe – I don't know if you necessarily should manage every game in April like it's game seven, but I do think for the players, the games in April should be as important as the games in September. Like, you know, we kind of saw – like, this is kind of the attitude I was talking about, I think, in our last episode where the games in April matter in the standings technically just as much. So – there should be urgency the whole season. Now, you don't necessarily have to push a guy to 130 pitches in April necessarily. You know, that probably isn't necessary. There are certain decisions that probably aren't, maybe should be different in April versus September. But so I do think like approaching games in April with more urgency, I think is fine. Because as we said in April, like even after the Conforto hit by pitch game, we were like, I don't care that it was kind of a silly ending. They won the game. Like this, they might miss the playoffs by one game, or they might make the playoffs by one game. Every game counts. The games in April do count as much as September. However, there is definitely a more palpable sense of urgency to games in September because you can see the time running out. And I think sometimes it's hard. I don't know. If that's not going to instill urgency in you, seeing the games like running out ahead of you and knowing that certain players just aren't going to have enough time to come back because the season's going to be over. If that can't instill urgency into how you're approaching both managing and also playing every game, then I don't know what will as a professional athlete, because the time is clearly running out for the Mets and for any team that's on the bubble right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And players are going to try to win as much in April as they will in September, obviously. But as a manager, like, yeah, you're right. You're not going to push your starting pitcher too far in April. Like, you got to think about 162. I completely understand that in April. And the games do mean the same. Like, technically, a win in April means the same amount as a win in September. But like I said, in April, you don't know where your team's going to be in September. Like, you could be a bottom dweller. You don't know. Like, it may end up not mattering. But in September, when you have the chance to make a run at the playoffs,
when you, like, know, you know for sure a fact that it matters.
It's right there.
Yeah.
You need – it's all hands on deck. These players, if they don't make the playoffs, for the next 5-6 months, they're going to be able to rest. Let him rest then. Like, it's not – I don't even think it's the players. Like, it's him. Like, stop babying these players. Right. Pitch them where they need to pitch. Like, these are important games. What's – like, what's the point of even doing the whole season if, when you have a playoff shot right in front of you, you're not going to do everything you can to make the playoffs? Like, isn't that the goal of the sport, to make the playoffs and win a championship? Like, how – the moves he makes are just ridiculous. Like I said, it's it shouldn't be moves that, like – a consensus among fans where they would make the opposite move, and it's happened time and time and time again. And it's not just like he does it and then we're like, oh, he should have done this. Like, at the time, we're all like, what the hell are you doing? Like, it's just, he's not fit to be a manager for a winning baseball team. He's just not. I love him as a person. Let him be the quality control coach and be best buds with all the players. That's fine. But he's not fit to manage a winning baseball team.
Yeah. And I think the way he talks about, like, preserving players, I think you can maybe attribute that to just the fact that he's been a minor league manager for most of his career. And, like, in the minor leagues, the goal is not, I mean, you want the team to win in general, like, players are competitive, but, like, the overall philosophy is really different, I think, than it is at the major league level. And I think he's still in that kind of philosophy of helping players, like, grow, but not necessarily, like, I think recognizing that, you know, at the major league level, like, you have reached the pinnacle. Like, everyone here, like, this is as far as you can go. And I sometimes feel like you're still kind of approaching, he still kind of approaches games, or the Mets in general approach games, like, almost it's like a minor league development situation. You know, it's like the players, they have arrived here for, like, a high, and I don't mean, like, higher purpose, you know what I mean? But, like, for a different purpose than you are in the minor leagues. The whole purpose of the minor leagues is to develop as a player and be ready for the big leagues. And the whole purpose of playing in the big leagues is to try to make the postseason. And I sometimes feel like that's not, like, yes, you want to keep your players healthy and you don't want to make irrational decisions that will endanger them long term. But I sometimes feel like you're right. The urgency that he lacks, I feel like, I don't think you, I just feel like it's kind of a minor league mentality of not approaching like the Mets games as if it's the biggest possible stage, and that it's almost as if they're developing for something else, but, like, this is where they're supposed to be, and, like, this is, like, the biggest stage they can be on. There's nowhere else to go other than the playoffs, which is clearly not realistic at this point based on how they've played and how they've managed the team. So I just think, the lack of urgency, I feel like it's just not, it's the, like, the fire of understanding, like, how important winning is not really there. No, and it's about, like, the individual players more than, like, the team actually having succeeded.
Yeah. And it's just, that game was such a gut punch, losing that game to the Cardinals, knowing how many teams had lost. Like, it's just, I don't understand the philosophy at all. And no offense to him, but putting Jake Reed in that game, like, it literally, like, it blows my mind. Like, if you knew you had – I get Trevor Williams is not great by any imagination, but he's been pretty good, and he's better than Jake Reed, and he's more proven than Jake Reed. Why are we
– he also wasn't injured for a month right before –
That's what I'm saying. Like, yesterday. how can you – and it's not fair to Jake Reed to put him in that situation and expect him
with a guy
to succeed. It's just not. But it's just ridiculous. Rojas has cost them probably close to 10 games this year with asinine moves as being the manager. Like, asinine. Like, it's almost as bad, if not worse, than how Mickey Callaway was. And we'd make fun of Mickey Callaway all the time and how clueless he was. Clueless Mickey. And it just seems like Rojas, I don't understand. He comes from such a smart baseball family. He's been around the game his entire life. You would think these simple moves it's crazy. He doesn't have any feel either. Like, it's like that couple weeks ago against the Giants, right? Taiwan Walker's dealing. Absolutely dealing. Mm. And Crawford's coming up after an error and a bloop hit. Two guys on. He takes Walker out. I get you're bringing in Loop, one of your better relievers, your best reliever, but Walker was cruising. Let him decide his own fate. Like, what is going on? And that screwed them. That's just one game. De La Cruz, the Miami game, yeah, sure. Who's to say the Mets would be able to score a run in extra innings and win that game? But give him a chance. Like, you're not even giving him a chance. It's just, it blows my mind.
Right. Well, it'll be very interesting to see what they end up, you know, doing in the offseason. Because I think, wasn't there some interview saying that, like, you know, he had some option for next year that, like, hasn't been picked up? Or they haven't basically locked into him in any way contract-wise for next year. So it'll be very interesting to see, like, what they end up doing as manager. I think there will be a new manager for sure. I agree.
Better be gone.
But it'll be interesting to see, like, if they, you know, I feel like a lot of people want those, like, old school, more fiery managers. And I'm not sure who's really out there. So it'll be interesting
Buck
to see,
Showalter.
Like,
it's not going to happen, but bring me Buck Showalter.
That's,
please.
It's funny. My dad says the same thing. I just don't know. Like, in the current, like, baseball landscape, I don't see that happening.
They're going to go for an analytical guy, definitely. Right. But if in a perfect world, you bring me Buck Showalter, who has a feel for the game and can also tie in analytics with it. Right. But, like,
because who's to say he wouldn't be receptive to,
and,
like,
Buck Showalter did a hell of a job in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. Hell of a job with that bullpen and that team. They were good under him. Like, I would love Buck Showalter.
Yeah, my dad's been saying that for years. So we'll see if that happens. But, yeah, it will certainly be interesting to see his fate. You're right. I agree. I really don't think he is, like, the person to take them to the next level in terms of a manager. And if that's not the case, then they need to find a new manager. No, and I think you're more harsh on him than I am, but I agree that I don't see him necessarily taking them to the next level with how he seems to approach the game on a day-to-day basis. And, like I said, that's the ultimate goal of being in the major leagues. And it's not like the Mets really are in, like, a rebuilding mode. I mean, they should be in a mode where they're actively competing every year.
They should have won this division hands down. Hands down. They
should have. So, with that said, you know, obviously changes do need to be made. So I agree that should be one of them. We'll see. Maybe when we get into the offseason, we can probably talk more about, like, those particular candidates. I'm sure, you know, every team, there's always managerial openings for several teams in the offseason. So I'm sure there'll be chatter among multiple teams, not just the Mets, who are looking for new skippers. So we will definitely see where that takes us. But I do kind of want to talk on a little bit more of a positive note. Now you've gotten that out of your system. I know you were really passionate about it. So I'm glad we discussed that. We can talk about something a little bit more fun and exciting. And that was the Yankee series over the weekend. And I know that you attended one of the games on Saturday. You attended the game on 9/11. And I watched that game from home. And I have to say, I was a little bit disappointed with kind of the overall choppiness of the pregame ceremony that was broadcast, or lack thereof. So, and I've never been in the stadium for a game on 9/11. I think this year's ceremony was kind of more extensive than it usually is. So, Jake, what, from your perspective, like, what was it like being in the stands for both the pregame ceremony and also just kind of the heightened emotion during the game, which is what I saw on TV?
So it was absolutely nuts. Like, the ceremony, all of us, and I went with my dad and a few of our friends, and a couple of my friends are Yankee fans, so that was cool. Not really cool, but it was cool to kind of enjoy that with them. But the ceremony was amazing. I'm sorry to people who were watching on TV. Fox, from what I heard, did a horrible job of cutting away, and I don't know why they would do that. It was such a beautiful ceremony with all the first responders they had on the field, the bagpipers they had on the field playing. Like, it was reminiscent of the ceremony they had right after 9/11 in 2001. They had a lot of 2001 Mets in attendance, which was really cool. The ceremony, they just did a great job. Having Joe Torre and Bobby Valentine throw out the first pitch was awesome. And the game itself, so my friend Dominic, who went with us, he's a huge Yankee fan. Kid's a nut, screaming his head off, nut. So going into the stadium, he's like, I just have a feeling like this game's going to be like a classic game. Like, this is going to be an awesome game. So before the game, where we sit in right field, it's like where James McCann's warming up and stuff. And my friend Dom, he's screaming, James McCann, James McCann. So it was kind of ironic that after the Mets were losing 5-0, McCann hit the go-ahead home run. And I'm screaming in Dom's face, James McCann, and he's just laughing. But it was just a great back and forth with the Yankee fans that were there. It was just a great atmosphere. Since 2019, I mean, maybe even more so, I've never seen Citi Field like that electric for a regular season game. It was amazing. Like, there wasn't an empty seat in the house, and there was so much back and forth, being down 5-0, coming back. Obviously, they ultimately lost, which sucked, but it was a great game. It was a great game to be at. The atmosphere was amazing. It's just, I couldn't have asked. Besides a Mets win, I couldn't have asked for more.
Yeah, I mean, I've never actually been to a Subway Series game in person. And, you know, people always say, like, oh, the Subway Series is, like, dead or it's irrelevant or whatever. But I feel like I don't know. It looked pretty alive to me, like watching on TV. It seemed like the thing is, even when like the Yankees are obviously much better than the Mets, there's like always, I don't know, there's always some rivalry ingrained just because both the teams play in the same city and they share the same media market. So we're always hearing about the Yankees, even though we're Mets fans. And like, we're basically aware of everything they're doing, even though we're rooting for the Mets. So I think both fan bases are always very aware of what each other is doing. And so I think that just like fuels the rivalry even more because they're so heavily covered. And it seemed to me that, you know, it, I thought that that was just an incredible environment on Saturday, maybe topped only by the environment on Sunday, which was also wild for the Sunday night game, which was one of my favorite games I've like watched on TV in recent memory. Now that was really, really exciting.
That was so cool.
And I was so happy that Lindor had such a signature game, like in that setting. You know, that would have been great if he had three home runs. Like imagine this game being against like the Reds or whatever. That would have been great. Like that would have been really cool that he had three home runs and a go-ahead home run. But I feel like it just in this setting to really come through, especially with like, you know, against the Yankees on Sunday night. And, you know, technically the games against the Yankees don't really mean much to the Mets in the standings, but you know, like emotionally they do mean something. Like I don't care what anyone says. It means a little bit extra for whatever reason when the Mets
feels like a playoff. Yankees. Every time we play the Yankees, it feels like a playoff atmosphere.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Mets haven't been to the playoffs in 5 years, so this is basically the closest they've gotten.
Yeah, this is
the closest. Unfortunately, so you know what? We'll take it because if they don't end up making it this year, at least they won on Sunday Night Baseball against the Yankees. But I was just so happy that he really had. You know, everyone's always talked this year. I think we've talked about it. What's his signature moment? What's Lindor's signature moment going to be? And you know, most people's signature moment, hopefully, comes in the postseason, not during the regular season. But I really felt like, I feel like he broke through whatever people were hoping his signature moment would be. I don't think you could ask for a better game than what he delivered on Sunday. Yeah. I was just so happy for him because after all like the ridiculous things about people booing him and even post game, like people are still asking him about being booed. And I feel like just enough already with that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Let him move on. He's done enough at this point. Like, I know he hasn't had the greatest season, but I feel like the season's almost over at this point. I would love for people to just stop asking how it feels.
It's obvious that it wears on him, the booing.
Yeah, exactly.
I get that, like, maybe when it was going on, but to
now that he's done better, now, yeah,
like, what
exactly
do you expect him to say? But for him to do that against the Yankees, and especially he hit those two home runs, and to be talking shit with Stanton and all that happened, and then
the bench clearing quote-unquote brawl, which great. Was actually just people standing around.
No, but I loved it because they're showing some grit there, and they're showing some personality. How many times have we wanted the Mets to, like, punch back this year, like with the whole Alvarado crap, or how many teams have gone after them, Plar getting hit in the face? So many instances where you just wish this team would kind of show some backbone and, like, be pissed off. Like, yeah. That was great from Lindor, like, I love that Lindor is all happy all the time. He's smiling. But it was great to see him, like, pissed off and, like, yeah, like, fuck you. Like, this is me. This is what I'm doing here. Like, it was great. And for him to have that instance with Stanton and then his next at bat in the eighth inning to hit an absolute bomb was just amazing.
You
and
could not have scripted it any better. And then Stanton popping out to Lindor to end the game.
That was
perfect. I was getting a little worried in that ninth inning. But then Stanton came up, and I was like, okay, if he hits a home run here, I'll be very sad. But if he gets out here, that will be the perfect ending, and I won't have minded that two people got on ahead of it.
But it was sick. So. But hopefully, obviously, over the life of the contract, Lindor has plenty of quintessential moments, you know, like in the playoffs for games that actually really mean something. But I thought that was great. With everything Lindor's been through this year, and obviously he's had a crap year. And, I mean, over the last few months, he's been hitting fine. But overall, he's had a very disappointing year. I mean, that's obvious. But so for him to kind of do that and kind of get a monkey off his back in the way and kind of win over the fans, because like you said, like, yeah, it sucks that we're getting so excited over one win in September that honestly probably might not mean anything. But in the long run, I mean, beating the Yankees, like, if you ask the Met fans.
If you can't enjoy a win like that because it doesn't technically mean that much,
no,
then
in the moment, you enjoy it. But overall, as a season, like, it's a fun moment to look back on. But, like, obviously against the Yankees, like, at Citi Field with that crowd, like, it means a lot more. So I thought it was great for Lindor.
Right. And I feel like there's a few games every season that I always go back and, like, in the off season when there's no Mets games and I'm sad, I, like, go back and watch, like, highlights and replays of you. Like, there's, like, a few games every year that stick out that I always go back to. And I remember last year, honestly, there, like, weren't that many good games. The only game I, like, really watched replays from was Pete Alonso's walk-off homer against the Yankees on the day after Tom Seaver passed away, which – there was a great, like, mic'd up video of him kind of talking through the whole game. And I've definitely rewatched that a lot in the off season. But I feel like this is what, that was one of those games that I'm definitely going to like look back fondly on. And whenever I need like a little kind of Mets to get me through the off season, or I'm just feeling like watching a good Mets highlight from the season to remind me there actually were a lot of good moments. That's one game that is definitely going to be one I go back to for sure. And as I understand it, I know you said you were at the game on Saturday, which was very loud, obviously. And so for those of you who may not have seen our tweet, we were actually going to record last week. You know, we were going to come out with a new episode like middle of last week. However, Jake was being a really, really great fan in DC and unfortunately lost his voice at the game that the Mets blew the 9-0 lead, which they miraculously ended up coming back to win. However, as I understand it, it's you said that you lost your voice again going to the game on 9-11 because I thought we had just gone through you recovering from your losing your voice so we could record another episode. But it seems like that happened again. So
yeah, it did. So at that game that they blew the 9-0 lead, I wanted to cry because I was losing. I looked like an ass because I was losing my mind. Like Stroman made, if you guys remember, Stroman made that insane play where he tagged Soto out at third. There was just a lot, it was a lot of good in that game. And then they come back and then Lindor hits that home run in what it was the ninth. It was technically the second extra inning. It was a 7-inning game, but in the ninth, you get that home run. I was losing my mind screaming. So yeah, I had, my voice was gone. I sent Elizabeth like a voice memo on our phone, like trying to talk, showing her like I couldn't speak. So then, yeah, my voice came back probably like Thursday, Friday. Went to the game Saturday, and like I said, my friend Dom was screaming like a lunatic when the Yankees went up 5-0. Like, I mean like a lunatic. So when the Mets came back, you know, I had to give it right back to him. And I was screaming at all the Yankee fans that they were up 5-0, and then we had come back. It was just – it was nuts. It was a great environment. But, yeah, so I lost my voice again that night, and I just got it back, like, over the last couple of days. So, yeah, it was a good time. I think I lost it for a good reason.
No, for sure, for sure. I feel like losing your voice at a sporting event is depending on the event, it's definitely – it sucks, but then you remember that it was because you were excited. It's funny. I don't think I've ever lost my voice cheering in a Mets game. Maybe the Conforto walk-off game in 2019 came close, but I didn't like lose my voice after that. The only time I've ever actually lost my voice at a sporting event wasn't actually at a Mets game. It was actually at a UVA basketball game in like 2018. I don't even think it was like that big of a game. They're playing Louisville. It was like the regular season. I don't know, for whatever reason, it was like a really good game and I just like completely lost my voice. But unfortunately, I was also like in two choirs at the time. So that wasn't that great for that week because I like couldn't sing for a week. So that was unfortunate. And that taught me a lesson for the rest of the season. I was like, hey, you got to be like more careful. I know it's like your senior year of college and you want to enjoy basketball games, but you actually like have other obligations that require your voice. So I try to like scream healthfully if I'm at a game, but it's funny though. I haven't been to like that many Mets games that like something really, really exciting happened, to be totally honest. So I haven't really had a huge reason to like actually lose my voice at a game. Although I was at the game yesterday where Baez hit the game tying home run in the ninth inning, even though they ended up losing, which we've already talked about was very frustrating, but that was very exciting. And I was very excited about that. But yes, I'm glad you got your voice back. I didn't even know you lost it the second time until just today. So I'm glad that we were actually able to record today in spite of that. Yeah, and maybe even though your cheering didn't help them to win on Saturday, maybe it like carried over into Sunday.
Yeah, so they heard me and they exactly knew my voice and went through all that. So like, shoot, we got to win one.
Right.
So I appreciate that's
actually what Lindor was chirping at Stanton. He didn't say, but he was actually being
saying that the Yankees won and I had to lose my voice.
Exactly.
It wasn't about whistling. That's what it was really about.
Oh my gosh. That whole whistling situation, I feel like that was completely, is it just me or was that overreaction?
Whistling to be a dick. And
I feel like it was just a complete overreaction.
Something like they were telling what?
I feel like it was a complete overreaction in my opinion.
Oh yeah. 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 But I love that they're getting mad at something and using something as motivation. Like I've been waiting for that all season. So
right.
I don't care what it's about. And like, I love that. Talking to Stan, like I love that. Like it's great. Like I just think it was great. It lit a fire under them. I thought it was great.
Yeah. And I feel like every baseball fan, like at least most of them, I feel like everyone secretly loves when teams kind of fight and get into it.
Yeah.
It's very entertaining because baseball fights, usually no one actually gets hurt. It's just like a lot of drama, you know? And it's like, that's why people watch like reality television. They love watching like people fight and like be dramatic about things. And when baseball players get dramatic, it's fun. It's like reality TV because it's completely ridiculous. It's just usually over something silly, whether it's like a pitch or someone getting hit or whatever. So I definitely love it. Definitely don't want anyone to actually get hurt. And sometimes instigating a fight can motivate the other team, which you don't necessarily want to see. the Mets have done that a couple times this year, but definitely love to see all like the fire and the passion in that Yankee series from both teams. I thought it was a lot of fun. Yeah. I did think it was also funny how, you know, everyone was talking on 9/11, how the Mets and Yankees stood together on the sidelines before the game. And I was like, they were all unified on 9/11. And then the next day, everyone's like fighting with each other and benches have cleared. So I feel like that's like New York in a nutshell for you. One day, everyone's like buddy, buddy. And then the next day, like you're at someone's throat. But sometimes.
I thought that was so cool. They stood together and Garrett Cole and Jacob DeGrom.
And they didn't show that on TV either. That's, I just saw that on Twitter.
Fox shit the bed in that. They did a horrible job.
Well, I wish they had showed more of like,
Why do you need to hear them talking like or should go to commercial? Like that's the importance behind that game. Like commercials. Wouldn't you be showing that? Like I don't whatever.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But I wish they had showed more of like them like before the game kind of standing together. But that would have been nice. But to wrap up this week's episode, now that we've talked about some of the kind of negative things recently and then some of the positives, we're gonna balance it out with something completely neutral, and that is trivia, which we have done on the podcast before. I enjoy trivia. You enjoy trivia. I enjoy asking people trivia and also answering it. So I don't have a particular theme, although I do have some questions that are kind of similar. You'll see what I ask. But I have come up with a couple questions to end this week's episode. And I think you'll probably know most of these. But
The ones I have have nothing to do with each other.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Okay. Well, why don't you start? You ask me one. Yeah.
Okay. So I was just thinking about this because who knows, this could be Michael Conforto's last couple weeks as a Met. I mean, hopefully not. Hopefully they get him a qualifying offer. We'll see what happens. But anyway, so I have a Michael Conforto question for you.
Okay.
So in the 2015 playoffs, Conforto hit 3 home runs. Do you know which pitchers he hit them off of?
I'm going to be honest. I'm not super up on like Conforto specific trivia, and I definitely don't. No. So I'm going to guess because I know he had 2 home runs in the World Series in game 4. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't actually know this off the top of my head. So I really should know this.
One is a former Met. His second home run of that game was, his first home run of that game was off a former Met.
You mean a Met that someone who was a Met before 2015?
Yes.
Okay. Who was on the Royals? Again, like I really should know this. Honestly, I have no idea. I'm going to guess for, like, the other one, was it off of – from the non-World Series one, was it off of Arrieta?
No.
I honestly don't know. Just tell me. Like, I do have no idea. I really should know, but I don't.
One in the NLDS off of Zach Greinke.
Greinke, okay.
And he hit 2 in the World Series. The first one came off of Chris Young, and the second one came off of Danny Duffy.
Chris Young. I forgot about – I completely forgot about him. Mm-hmm. Wow. And Danny Duffy, who's now – injured and on the Dodgers.
Yeah, but he was good at that point.
He was. He was having a good year this year, too, before he got injured. Okay, honestly, I had no idea. I should. Conforto's, for whatever reason, I always liked Conforto. He's not one of those players that I've, like, religiously researched every big moment he's ever had, so I did not know that. But one question I'm going to ask you, which is in light of the Roberto Clemente Awards, which the nominees for each team were announced, I think, yesterday. And Pete Alonso is the Mets Roberto Clemente Award nominee for this year, so congrats to him. Who was the last Met to win the overall award, and what year did that happen?
Curtis Granderson in 2016.
That is correct. Do you know who was the last Met to win before him? No. I had a feeling you'd know this, but this is a follow-up.
Nope.
So Curtis Granderson, as you said, won 5 years ago. 10 years before that, in 2006, Carlos Delgado won the Roberto Clemente Award for the Mets. And I believe they've had 4 winners in their career. I think Al Leiter won it 1 year in, like, 2000, maybe. And they had someone else win in a previous year. I forget when. Cool. Maybe sometime in the 80s. But anyway, yes. So I'm not sure when that actually comes out, but I know that's a big deal for whoever ends up winning. I think Wainwright won it last year. And, yes, Granderson won it 5 years ago. So that was my first question. So what else do you have for me?
All right, I think you'll get this one. I probably should have started you with this one.
That's okay. I don't mind being challenged. I genuinely didn't know the Conforto questions at all, and I wasn't afraid to say it.
What starter has made the most opening day starts in Major League history? And bonus points if you can get how many opening day starts they had.
In Major League history?
Yep.
So this isn't a Mets question.
Kind of.
Okay, I know Tom Seaver's made the most for the Mets, and he made like 10 in a row, didn't he? Or like 8 in a row? Is he the answer?
Ding, ding, ding.
Really?
16.
He made 16? Wow. I didn't realize. See, I knew he had the Mets record, which it was it like 10, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I didn't realize. So Tom Seaver has the overall MLB record for most opening day starts. You would think players that pitched for like 27 years, like Nolan Ryan, I guess he never had 16 opening day starts. Huh. Or like Cy Young. I don't know. Wasn't he always the best pitcher on his team? I'm not sure. Interesting. Okay. Well, I'm glad I got that one right. Okay. Maybe mine were too easy. I feel like you're going to know all these. Okay. You know what? I'm going to skip that one to go. Okay. So I'm going to name a few. I don't know. How good are you with players walk-up songs? Do you know like all of them?
Not all of them, but I feel like I'm pretty good.
Okay. I'm going
to, I know them more by sound. I don't know if I'll know like the names of them.
Okay. I'm going to ask a few what I think are fairly well-known-ish Mets walk-up songs from recent history, from like the last 10, 15 years. And I'm going to say the song, and you're going to tell me which player had that as their walk-up song.
Okay.
Okay. So the first one is, this is a softball, is Call Me Maybe.
This wasn't like the last 2 years, was it? Last
no.
2 years? It was like right when that song came out?
Yes. I don't think it was for the whole season, but it was definitely a thing.
You stumped me. I don't know.
It was Justin Turner, believe it or not. I think he like lost that. A bet to have that as his walk-up song.
I remember that.
Okay. The next one is Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones.
Oh. Was that Duda?
No.
Hold on. It's not Nimmo.
No.
Nimmo? I don't know that.
It was Ike Davis.
God damn it. I knew. I had a
feeling. I always think of him when I hear that song now.
That's why I guess Duda, because I had a feeling it was a first baseman.
Now, okay, I actually do have Duda's walk-up song on here. So now that you've already said him, do you remember what his walk-up song actually was?
No, but it was like a classic rock song like that, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. Lucas Duda's walk-up song was the Jimi Hendrix version of All Along the Watchtower.
Yes.
Which was originally written by Bob Dylan. Okay, next song I have, I think this one's easy. Fly Me to the Moon.
Oh, that was Todd Frazier.
Yeah, and now I hate that song because it always reminds me of him. Sorry, Todd Frazier. I just got sick of it. Every time he came up and that song played, I was like, ugh.
We're going to get him as a guest, and you can just tell him your hatred.
Oh, well, I'm sorry in advance. Okay, next one. I only have two more. Next one is The Circle of Life from The Lion King.
Oh, that was Cespedes. I used to love that, and they'd hold up the stuff. That was
cool. There was a video of someone, like I saw this earlier today, someone like holding up like a lion stuffed animal in the stands.
Yes. Somebody was holding up last night, too, like those Apple cups they sell.
Yeah.
With ice cream.
The home run apple, home run.
Yeah, that. They were holding, like three people were holding that. That looked funny.
Okay, last one I have is Fly Like an Eagle by Steve Miller Band.
I have no idea.
Okay, I'll give you a hint. It was a pitcher.
How recent?
Pretty recent.
Harvey?
No. I actually forget what his song was. I'll have to look it up. Actually, his song, I think, was by U2. But Fly Like an Eagle was Steven Matz's one of them.
That was going to be my second guess.
I think Harvey's, wasn't it like Sunday Bloody Sunday? I'm pretty sure it was by U2. But
I'll never forget DeGrom's Simple Man.
He has the best one. Okay, the best thing, it's not even when he comes up to bat, is when he's like warming up to start and they play that song at the stadium. It's just like the best. He's elite in every respect, including the songs that he chose for his music. Okay, that's probably enough trivia from me. So you can send me your next question.
This is according to MLB.com. I got this from. But so Aaron Loop is looking to set the Mets all-time single season record for ERA by a relief pitcher. Do you know who holds the record currently? Like after at least 45 appearances.
For a reliever?
Within the last 10 years. And it's not somebody you would think was like an elite reliever.
Oh, really?
He was also a lefty.
Lefty in the last 10 years holds the Mets all-time reliever ERA.
This is on MLB.com. I didn't think it was him, but according to MLB.com, this is
single season.
Some people say Addison Reed, but in the one season, he didn't have enough appearances that I had to qualify. So it's not Addison.
Okay.
It's not
Addison Reed. Blevins?
No.
Damn. I wish it were, though.
One more guess? He had a funky motion, kind of. He threw the ball kind of weird.
It's like on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, is it?
within the last 10 years. I was going to guess Pedro Feliciano, but I don't think he ever had an ERA that low.
It was 2014.
Oh, my God. I don't think I'm going to get it, but okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. Blevins was my best guess.
It was Josh Eggen with a 1.32 ERA in 47 appearances in 2014, according to MLB.com.
I didn't realize it was that low. I didn't realize he ever had a season that was that good.
That's what it says on
MLB. You know what? No, he was really good at one time. He was like elite that year, yeah. And then that was kind of it. Oh, all right.
So, I don't know if that's what it says on MLB.com. So.
Oh, interesting. So he has – but if Loop could break that record, though, this year with his ERA. Interesting. Yes. Well, we know the Mets, I think the starter ERA record is still not good in 1.54 from 85. I don't know.
DeGrom came close to it.
DeGrom came close. He came close, but I think that's the lowest anyone's had since then. But interesting. All right. Well, I have a newfound appreciation now for Josh Eggen. So thank you for bringing that up. That's not a Met I've thought of in quite some time.
Yep. So that's the last one I have. You got one more?
I have one more. But I think you're going to know it. I'll ask it anyway. Okay, so we talked about earlier in the episode how Francisco Lindor had the Mets. He hit 3 home runs in a game, which was the 4th time in Mets history that anyone's ever hit 3 home runs in a home game. Who were the other 3 Mets to do that, and what years?
Cano did it in 19.
Mm-hmm.
Nieuwenhuis did it in 16.
It's actually 2015, but Kirk Nieuwenhuis was the first.
And I know, and Duda?
Yes. Lucas Duda also did it in 2015, I believe.
Cool.
I should have looked that up. I think I know that off the top of my head. I will check after this. But yes, those 3 have – I cannot believe that no Met until 2015 had ever – that is like one of the most unbelievable
things I've ever heard. Or a good amount that have hit it on the road, though.
Yes, they've had like 20 people hit it on the road, but I just can't believe that till 2015.
Did Cespedes hit 3 home runs in Colorado?
He did, yes. I think he hit 3 home runs also at Citizens Bank Park once.
Okay.
But yes, only those 3 have ever hit 3 home runs in a home game, and Lindor was also the first to hit 3 home runs in any Subway Series game ever, so... Yep. That was I didn't know that before Sunday. I thought some Yankee probably had done it, but no one has.
First one to do it at home while hitting at least one of them from the opposite side of the plate.
And that's true. Yeah, because none of the others were switch hitters. So, all right. Well, I think that will basically wrap it up. Thank you for listening to another episode of Cohen's Corner. As always, you can follow our podcast at Cohen's Corner Pod on Twitter. You can follow me at NYMFan97, and you can follow Jake at Giblin_Jake. So thank you guys so much for listening. We will record a new episode very soon and be back chatting with y'all as soon as we can. Looking forward to hopefully, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy the rest of this Mets season, whatever it brings. If it doesn't bring the playoffs, oh well. I'll just enjoy the next 2 weeks because I'll be sad when it's over. And I'll slowly forget all the bad games from this year and just remember the good times. I don't know if that happens with you, but I never actually remember that many bad games, usually. I just kind of remember the ones that were my favorites. So hopefully we get a few more good games before the year ends.
Yeah, I wish I could be like you. I'm always dwelling on the past. Like in 19, all I could think about was that game Edwin Diaz blew where they were up 6 runs.
I mean, I haven't forgotten that one. But I also remember the walk-offs from that year, too. So yeah, but those were also fun.
Enjoy it because in a couple weeks, most likely, we're not going to have Mets baseball for a few months. So, yeah, definitely enjoy it. Enjoy watching.
Yes.
Hopefully what is Luis Rojas' last games managing the Mets. Yeah, that's our episode for today, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Let's go, Mets.